Hello, and welcome to the audio edition of Beastly Business, the first in a series of animal behavior, human-animal bond mysteries, written and read by Myrna Milani. Chapter 22. When I woke the next morning, I felt like a multi-flattened piece of Grand Prix roadkill. I hauled my aching body into the shower, where I stood in the hottest water, followed by the coldest rinse I could stand, in hopes of activating my clearly defunct on switch. When that didn't work, I pulled on a pair of panties and one of Bob's old t-shirts, and stumbled downstairs in search of some calamine lotion for the highly suspicious blotches that mottled my extremities. Coffee, I mumbled as I staggered toward the bathroom and yelled, seeking the lotion. Gotta make some coffee before I get dressed. That simple, if somewhat inarticulate, statement produced a most profound effect. As I pawed through the medicine cabinet with one hand and scratched various parts of my anatomy with the other, I became convinced that I could smell coffee. As soon as I noticed the presence of the aroma, I simultaneously noticed the absence of something else. "Where are the pets?" I asked the frowsy image with the scratched cheek in the mirror. Unfortunately, the hag in the mirror didn't know the answer either, and, after I liberally, if somewhat haphazardly, slathered myself with chalky pink lotion, I retreated to the kitchen to solve the mystery myself. Once there, I stood in the doorway rubbing a particularly vicious itch on my left leg with my right foot while I observed the scene before me. When that didn't result in anything comprehensible, I opted for the direct approach. "McCarthy, what are you doing here?" I asked. The door was open. He sat at my kitchen table drinking coffee out of one of my mugs as he pored over some papers, while the cat worshipped him from the windowsill and the dog snoozed at his feet. "You look like hell." "Thank you. Did you break into my house just so you could insult me?"
"I told you, the door was open as usual. What happened?"
"I had a hot date."
I poured myself a cup of coffee and hobbled to the table and sat down opposite him. He held up a small, opaque, plastic bag whose numbered label bore the TransGen logo. When I reached for it, he pulled it away, making it very clear it contained something he thought would interest me enough to tell him what he wanted to know.
"Oh, go away, McCarthy." I made no attempt to hide my irritation. "I'm in no mood to play games."
He stared at my pink blotches until I felt my color rising.
"That's not what I hear."
He tapped his long fingers lightly on the table in a manner I found exceptionally annoying.
"Says who?"
I took what I expected to be a fortifying sip of coffee, only his bitterly strong brew made my eyes water. I glared at him, jumped up from the table, dumped the coffee, and started a fresh pot.
"Says Ted DeWitt."
The delay made his answer sound more ominous when it finally came.
"Ted DeWitt? Don't believe I know the man."
I twittered nervously as all the possible, mostly horrifying, ramifications of his reply washed over me.
"Too bad. You owe him a lot."
My partner waved the bag in my direction.
"He recoded all the locks in the lab after Weintraub was arrested. Lucky for you, though, he gave this to me before he talked to his wife."
McCarthy treated me to the very blue-eyed stare routine. And even though I told myself I didn't squirm, I did shift uncomfortably as I leaned against the counter, waiting for the coffee to brew.
"I take it those are the samples Weintraub stole from my fridge?"
I threw out that ridiculous comment casually, in an attempt to mask my considerable curiosity about the actual contents of his little bag.
"Better than that."
McCarthy upended the bag in a small tube, and another, smaller, clear plastic bag containing the missing patch of my denim shirt fell out.
"What?"
I tried to act nonchalant as I moved toward the table for a closer look. pure extract of Upton DNA, preserved at minus 60 degrees centigrade, possibly for eternity should the human species be so unlucky. He held the tube up in front of me. Some very interesting stuff on that second X chromosome of yours. The totally irrational image of McCarthy leering at my DNA, rather than the substance incriminating potential, caused me to make a grab for it. However, he scooped everything back into the bag before I could get my hands on it. Tell me what you were doing at the DeWitts and what you were up to last night, and I'll give it to you. Start with the DeWitts, he dictated, then took a major gulp of his liquid caffeine as if it were water. I poured myself a cup of decent coffee and sat down opposite him again. I was trying to get some information about Douglas DeWitt's dog, I explained, as I nervously stroked Elizabeth with my bare foot. And? He gave me the cruising raptor looking for a rodent snack look. And I got it and left. I gave him my that's all there is look, which wasn't nearly as effective. What kind of information? He tapped the plastic bag for emphasis. Training stuff, mostly. I gave him the basics, then added, Look, McCarthy, I really didn't plan or even want to see Ms. DeWitt. Honest. It just sort of happened when I was talking to the trainer. I'm willing to stay here however long it takes you to tell me what you're holding back. He stood up, stretched gracefully like a large cat, and refilled his cup. It's just dog stuff, McCarthy. I don't see that that has anything to do with you. Once again, I attempted to convince him that there was no reason to talk about my visit to DeWitt's mother. He sat down and tapped that damn bag again. Why don't you let me be the judge of that? Because, to tell you the truth, McCarthy, I think your judgment stinks. But, I reconsidered when I noticed the murderous way he was scowling at me. Maybe you have a point. I was trying to find out who killed Monica Sonko. I know that. So? He scowled at me even more darkly, which didn't seem to bode well for my efforts at quality communication. There, you see? That's the problem. You don't do dog murderers any more than the real cops, do you? You do. I don't know. I scratched my elbow as I thought about this. People murderers, I guess. McCarthy ran his hand through his hair several times, as if to reassure himself he still had it all. You're looking for a dog murderer, right? He repeated. Yes, but not a person who murders dogs. A dog who murders people. I clarified the point after noticing that he still wore that same vague, somewhat amphibious expression. I told you before, I don't think Monica's dog killed her. I know you don't, but I thought you thought a person killed her and made it look like a dog did it. He said this as he distractedly observed the cat stomping down a sleeping place in his lap. At first I did, but after I talked to Barbara Fujama, I knew it had to be another dog. You know Barbara? He sighed. Not really. I just went to see her about the postmortem report. I eyed him critically. I take it you do know her? When my sometimes partner nodded, I gave him the skewer routine. Then why didn't you tell me what the PM report said if you thought I thought a person killed Monica and made it look like her dog did it? I demanded irritably. Chandler McCarthy leaned back in his chair and studied me much too thoughtfully. Because I thought if anyone could prove that report was wrong, you were the one who could do it. I felt my mouth drop open. But I thought you... I began, but then realized I had no idea what I thought, so I said, thank you, instead, and he reverted to staring at the cat in his lap. When it appeared that McCarthy intended to continue brooding over whatever it was he brooded over, oblivious to his surroundings, I excused myself to get dressed. While I pulled on jeans, white tank top, and an oversized denim shirt, I tried to anticipate every possible question he could ask and rehearsed any and all possible answers. By the time I returned to the kitchen, I thought I had a good answer for every question he could come up with. What do you want me to do? Naturally, McCarthy posed the one question that never occurred to me. Aside from give me those samples, I don't know. Ted DeWitt not only hired me to find the goat in the data, he's also a good friend. McCarthy offered that tantalizing piece of information quietly. If you think his son is guilty of murder, I'd like to know about it. I told you, I'm looking for a dog murderer, not a human murderer, I reminded him. Are you telling me that a dog could kill someone without the owner's knowledge? He scanned my face skeptically. Dogs kill deer and other animals all the time, and their owners are almost always shocked when they learn about it. I shrugged. From the reports I've read, the same thing happens when dogs kill people, too. You think Doug DeWitt's dog is a killer? My semi-partner played with the sleeping cat's ears. The way I see it, he's one of three possibilities. I played with my coffee cup. The other two being Jeff Weintraub's Doberman and the Winthrop's Golden. Who's your primary suspect? I don't have one. I don't know enough about the Golden yet, but from what I've seen and heard, the other two could kill under the right circumstances. The right circumstances? He leaned forward slightly in his chair, his blue eyes bright with interest. If the dogs felt they or their owners were being threatened by, say, another dog or person, they might respond with an uncharacteristic amount of displaced or direct aggression. Give me some examples. Suppose Harley greatly intimidated one of my suspects. I hypothesized for his benefit. Given the opportunity, for example, if Monica shut Harley in the bedroom after a violent confrontation between the two dogs, then the other dog might have turned on Monica to dissipate its rage. That'd be displaced aggression. What about direct aggression? In that case, Monica would have intimidated the dog or its owner, and the dog would have attacked her in self-defense or in defense of the owner. McCarthy's brow furrowed in concentration as he endeavored to lift the firmly entrenched feline off his lap. You think that's what happened? He abandoned his cat eviction attempt and turned his attention back to me when Maddie signaled his disapproval of the proposed move by momentarily unsheathing his claws and lightly pressing them into McCarthy's crotch. I wanted to tell him I did believe one of those scenarios, just to get rid of him, but I couldn't. I shook my head. No, if Harley fought with another dog, he should have had wounds. None of the reports mentioned any. I pointed out, then smiled wryly. Of course, that might be because no one thought there was any reason to examine him after the cops blew him away. What about direct aggression aimed at Monica? It seems highly unlikely, too. I dismissed that possibility with relative ease. Monica got herself into the mess she did with Harley because she refused to take the lead in their human-canine relationship. Granted, both the Doberman and the Golden come up a little short in the confidence department, but I can't imagine her threatening either of those dogs or their owners. What about Doug DeWitt's dog? I'll level with you, McCarthy. I eyed him levelly. If I weren't such an objective investigator, your friend's son's dog would be my number one suspect right now. He pressed his lips firmly together, and his eyes turned a smoky blue. I appreciate your honesty, came the unexpected reply. What makes you think that? The day Monica died, Doug DeWitt and his dog showed up at his parents' house covered with blood, all of which may or may not have come from the dog's torn ear. What would you think? What happened to you last night? He abruptly changed the subject. Answer one question and I'll tell you, I countered obstinately. Where's DeWitt's dog now? Doug told me he brought him back up here yesterday. If McCarthy told me that because he wanted to see how I'd react, he got his wish. Son of a bitch, I murmured as I scratched my elbow. For a while, only the sound of human and animal breathing filled the kitchen. Finally, McCarthy spoke. What happened last night? I went back to Joe's cottage. Why? I wanted to see if I could find any evidence of another dog before the rain came. I massaged my aching neck. And? There was someone in the cottage when I got there. I automatically answered the next two questions I read in his eyes. No, I couldn't see who it was, and yes, maybe that person saw me. Then what? I started to run away from the cottage, but then realized someone was following me. Only it wasn't a person. It was an animal. I shuddered involuntarily at the memory. So I swam out into the lake and hoped it wouldn't follow me in the storm. You were in the lake during that storm? He gave me one of those penetrating looks that seemed capable of burning two holes in their target. I nodded and he looked down at the cat and mumbled something. Was that another sweet Jesus, McCarthy? Worse. He harumphed and looked up at me again. I assume you got away? Yes and no. When I came out of the water, I was followed again, but I don't know for sure by whom or what. But whoever or whatever had plenty of time to do me in, but chose to follow me all the way home instead. Maddie jumped to the floor and commenced grooming himself, while McCarthy picked cat hair off his jeans and continued his interrogation. You assign any meaning to that? Either whoever it was afraid of me, or exactly the opposite. I amused myself watching Teresa sleeping in her favorite patch of sunlight until I noticed McCarthy's puzzled expression. Or else he feels so sure he can get me whenever he wants, there's no need to rush, I explained. So, what did you learn from all this, Dr. Upton? McCarthy rose from his chair and moved toward the door in a deliberate manner I hope meant he planned to leave, particularly since he left the infamous plastic bag on the table. Is that some sort of philosophical question, McCarthy? I jumped up and followed him, deliberately blocking his view of the incriminating object. Actually, it seems to me you're already way too long on philosophical musing and way too short on practicality most of the time. He gave me that fuzzy reply as he disappeared out the door. What the hell is that supposed to mean? I called after him as he ambled down the walk. It means... He turned and tossed something in my direction. You shouldn't leave your keys in your car. I caught the familiar object and was still gaping at it when his car disappeared down the driveway. You've been listening to an excerpt from Beastly Business, an animal behavior and human-animal bond mystery written by veterinary ethologist Myrna Milani. For more podcasts, commentaries, books on animal behavior and the human-animal bond, and links to behavioral and bond sites, check out my website at mm@mmilani.com. For more specific information, feel free to email me at mm@mmilani.com. All rights related to the book Beastly Business in any form are retained by Myrna Milani. The background music in The Steppes of Central Asia by Alexander Bordin is used with permission of Katova Arts, www.katova.com.